Welcome to Chair Chat, an online web series hosted by me, Jamie Harrison, the chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Our goal in this series is to begin to look at political leaders, activists, and people involved in politics in a three-dimensional manner. We will move past the political caricatures to get to know the individual. So now, let's chat. You know, your name was bandied around earlier in the year as, you know, the campaigns for the presidency were very much in their infancy for this time around. But your name was bandied around as someone who would possibly run for president for the Democratic nomination. But then you decided that you weren't going to run and you were going to support Secretary Hillary Clinton. Why did you decide not to run? And the second part of that question, why did you then decide to support Secretary Clinton?
I am not a big believer, and I think democracy is undermined by the idea that somebody's indispensable. And I think that's what we see all the time. Oh, I have to run one more time. I have to have an extra term. It's all about me. It's not all about me. It's about campaigns that are about actually the people in them, not and the public. It's not about the politician. I think a lot of politicians make the mistake of thinking it's about them, and they usually don't do such a great job. So I didn't feel compelled to do this. I'd done it once before. Here's why I decided to support Hillary. One, she's very smart, and she's fact-based. As you might have guessed from my remarks, I don't appreciate people who do everything on an ideological basis and ignore the facts. I think we're plagued by that today. People have this really strong ideology. It's unsupported by the facts. Don't bother me with the fact. This is what I believe, so we'll shut down the government because Planned Parenthood, you know, sells fetal tissue. This is a lie. It's not true. And yet, this is the compelling ideology. I don't want somebody in the presidency like that. Mm-hmm. It's too dangerous. Secondly, I'd like a Supreme Court that actually cares what the Constitution says and not what the ideology of the Federalist Society says. And Hillary Clinton is a really smart lawyer who's going to put people on the board, on the Supreme Court, who actually do care what the Constitution says and what it means. Thirdly, she has more foreign policy experience than anybody else in the field. This is a tough time in American history. It's a tough time as we change the whole way the world works. And I think this is actually going to be one of Obama's big contributions, is to be the first president who actually realized we now live in a multipolar world. We don't live in a bipolar world, which we did for 70 years from Harry Truman through certainly Kennedy and Carter and so forth. And we don't live in the sort of unipolar world which George W. Bush imagined we lived in. We live in a multipolar world. And Obama gets it. He's talked about it, not enough, but he gets it. And Hillary gets it. And there's nobody else that has the qualifications or the ability that she does on either side of the aisle to get in. And then she's done some stuff since that time that I think is great. For her to say that a litmus test of accepting somebody as a Supreme Court nominee is to get rid of Citizens United is incredible. Because Citizens United is probably the single worst decision that undermined our republic ever made by the Supreme Court, except possibly Bush versus Gore, which also had no basis in law whatsoever. When you write a decision and you're on the Supreme Court and your last sentence of the decision is, and this decision shall not be used for any future precedent, you can be pretty sure that those people knew they were doing something that was really bad, and they were. And it really undermined the country. What it's done is, not because I disagreed with Bush, who I personally like a great deal and served with as governor for 6 years, it's because you cannot undermine the Constitution for the purposes of your own ideology. We've seen a lot of that in recent times in this country, and it's very, very dangerous. Citizens United, I have yet to see anywhere in the Constitution, I just can't find it, where it says a person is a corporation. I haven't found that yet. But if five justices in the Supreme Court seem to think they saw it there, either they're taking too much LSD or we need to get some people who don't or are not ideologically based on the Supreme Court. I don't mind if the Supreme Court decides that they don't agree with something I believe in. I want a Supreme Court that cares what the facts are, that examines the implications for the democracy, and that understands that democracy is more important, means that the people who are that the office is more important than the people who sit in the office. And I think the Supreme Court, some of the Supreme Court justices have forgotten why it's important to be on the Supreme Court. And that is why I want Hillary Clinton to be president of the United States.
Well, Governor, I mean, Secretary Clinton has been doing, has been leading the poll, the polls for the Democratic nomination. Lately, there's been some slippage, and some people are saying that is due to this email situation. Mm-hmm. They also say that slippage is also allowing more banner and discussion about Vice President Biden getting into the race and the reason why Senator Sanders is doing as well. What's your thought right now? I would love your opinions on whether or not that, on the Vice President possibly getting into the race, your thoughts on the email situation now, and the surprisingly for some, how well Senator Sanders is doing.
Well, let's do the last part first. Bernie, I've known Bernie for a long time. This has been his message for 40 years. This is life's work in politics. He has always been very worried about people who are getting left behind. And interestingly enough, I think that's the biggest issue in the presidential campaign on both sides. When you see people like Rick Perry and, you know, people's crews get out there in their announcement and make sympathetic noises about poor people after their voting record has just pillaged their entire existence, what's left of it, and Scott Walker, then you can be pretty sure that some pollster told them they suddenly had to decide they actually care about working people. So Bernie is the real deal, and I've known him for a long time. I told Hillary's folks, you better take him seriously, because if you don't, you're going to be very sorry. And I think what he's doing is he's not a negative campaigner. I think what he's doing is very, very good for the country and for the Democratic Party. The email scandal is bupkis. There's no there. It's a press. Bupkis is a northeastern term for BS. It means nothing. It literally means nothing. It's a Yiddish expression that I learned in my Orthodox Jewish medical school that I went to. I'm a very eclectic person, I have to say. But there's nothing to it. There truly is nothing to it. I went through this before in my own race. The press gets in this press frenzy. Everybody, it's called packed journalism. They all have to follow the story. Then they keep doing these nuances, hoping there's a there. You disprove this, and then they're on to something else, and then that doesn't turn out to be true. And it's embarrassing, because the best papers in the country do it. I can remember the New York Times covering my campaign this way. I'll tell you one story. I went to a Martin Luther King birthday celebration in Iowa right before the primary, and I was the front runner at the time, so I had 75 people chasing after me. I go in there. The press makes so much noise that it begins to disrupt the ceremony, so I leave. And, of course, the press isn't expecting I'm going to leave, so they make a huge amount of noise. They run out of the thing. They knock down a sitting congressman and an old lady on the way chasing me. And I stop at the bus, and I go, you got to behave yourself. Knock it off. Next day, the story, Dean causes riot at Martin Luther King. I'm not making this up. This is true. So I know a lot about packed journalism. Even the New York Times. The New York Times writes a story claiming that the Clinton Foundation donations somehow influenced the Russians acquiring a uranium mine. The event was 2 years apart. It was complete nonsense. And they sort of retracted it, but being the New York Times, they didn't want to admit that they'd made an enormous mistake. 3 months later, they write a story that's saying Hillary Clinton is being criminally investigated for her emails. It is totally untrue. There was no classified information at the time. It's been classified after the fact by the State Department. That's fairly routine in Washington. There was no intent to deceive anybody. All the stuff is being made public, including now her personal emails, which are being swept off the server, which I'm sure she's probably actually relieved about. People may know how much Chelsea's wedding. The press believes they should know everything. They believe they have a God-written right to know everything, including what goes on in your personal life. That's their job. That's fine. What I don't appreciate is their dishonesty. I've never thought the email scandal was going to derail Hillary, because it's all false. It's all packed journalism. It's all crap. It's all talk show hosts foaming at the mouth with nothing better to do, and their ratings are crappy, and this is why they do it, to crank the ratings up. It's a little sort of the reverse of the Trump thing. But Trump is about to get his, because they can't wait to nail him, and they're going to do it because they nail the front runner, which is why they go after Hillary. Now, do I think this is a terrible thing? No. Here's why I don't think it's a terrible thing. This is a tough business. Politics is a substitute for war. 400 years ago, we used to kill each other over asset allocation and succession. Today, we have an electoral process that doesn't change the fundamental nature of human beings. This is the most powerful position on the face of the earth. So you get the same instincts to do away with whoever's in your way to seize this power, but we just fortunately don't generally kill each other over this. But we used to, and the instincts are still there. The reason I don't think it's so bad, awful as the process is, and horrible as all the voters get fed up, is if you aren't tough enough to get through this process, I don't want you sitting across the table from Vladimir Putin when he demands Alaska back. So this is a tough, tough process. Hillary Clinton is a tough, tough person. This has been incredibly unpleasant for her and for everybody who supports her. I actually think it's going to make her a better president because I think she's always already been a tough person. She's going to get through this, and if she can't get through it, I'm not going to be complaining that the press assassinated her or anything like that. I'm going to say, okay, if you can't get through that, there's much tougher stuff ahead when you get into the office. So it's just part of our process. But let us not think that the press doesn't like to be a player. The only thing I really enjoy about this is the press wants to be a player, but they have really thin skin. So it is really fun to give it back to them. And they really don't like it, and I enjoy it enormously.
Vice President Biden.
Okay, here's the problem with Joe. Joe is a wonderful guy. He's a great person. He's been a terrific vice president. He has 100% name recognition. He's not out campaigning, so nobody said anything mean to him. He has the sympathies of not only every Democrat in the country, but every American in the country for the terrible things that he's had to go through. And he's at 22% in the polls. Now, I love the talk show host who, he's at 22% in the polls. It doesn't get better than this. He has our sympathy. We admire him. We love him. He's been a terrific vice president. And he has 100% name recognition. He's at 22% of the polls. Behind Bernie and Hillary. That's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. Hillary was at 67% in the polls when she got. Now she's at 47 or whatever she is. This is a tough business. And they were already starting to write stuff that's not nice. And, you know, we all have things that we did in our political career that would cause trouble. I'm not talking about personal scandals, because I doubt very much he has a personal scandal in his background. I'm talking about votes that you did to do this, which wasn't so popular at the time, or votes that you know... So anyway, if he uses his head, he's not getting in. And if he uses his heart, he is going to get in. We're all racehorses. And when you get to the starting line, there's only one way to go. And I think there's part of Joe Biden that absolutely wants to do this in his heart. But I think there's a lot of reasons not to do it. And I have no idea what he's going to do.
Well, Governor, I know since we have a live audience, I would also love to take one or two questions. Do we have a question for the governor? So we have a question from Andrew, and Governor, his question is, what are your opinions on campaign finance reform?
I think we were much better we were a better country when McCain-Feingold was in place. The danger of Citizens United is not that they're pouring money into the system and buying the system, although they are, and that's bad. The real danger is the notion that the rules are not the same for everybody in a democracy. That if you have $1 billion, your speech is worth a lot more than an ordinary person who goes to work. Now, the problem with that is not just the corruption in the system, because there's always something like that in every country. That's a problem. But the big problem is that if 80% of the people in this country believe that nobody gives a damn what they think, then the country stops working. That's what the problem is. It's also the problem with the inequality of wealth. And nobody's asking for everybody to make about the same amount of money. We don't want to be the Czechoslovakia before 1991. What we do ask is that everybody gets treated with respect and fairly. And we're not in an economic system right now where you can any longer start from nothing and make a gazillion dollars, because 100% of all the new wealth that's created in this country in the last 25 years went to the top 20%. And it's not because we're all socialists or communists and we want to equalize. All we want is to make sure everybody has a chance. Because when Americans believe that everybody has a chance, we love this country, and we don't begrudge people having, I don't begrudge people having a lot of money. Some people who have had a lot of money do a lot of great things. What I do think is dangerous is if ordinary people don't think they have a chance anymore, they think the system doesn't work for them, then the country stops working. And that is the danger. So I think that Secretary Clinton was absolutely right to identify Citizens United as the one litmus test for the Supreme Court. Normally, those of us who've actually made judicial appointments, I wouldn't say I have a litmus test. I'd never asked somebody if they were pro-choice or pro-life when I appointed people to the Supreme Court in Vermont. In this case, the issue is so much greater than simply even pro-choice or pro-life. This is an issue about the survival of our country as a vibrant democracy. And I think that Secretary Clinton is right to ask that question. Will you vote to restore true democracy that everybody can believe in this country? That's what Citizens United is about. And there has to be, we don't have to say there's no money, private money in campaigns, but we do have to have a level playing field so that the person who doesn't have $10,000 or $50,000 or $20 billion doesn't get extra influence because the person who does have it is using up all that influence.
Governor, a question from Mark Curious. There's a new trend right now where folks are taking a look at anti-establishment candidates. And his question is this just a short-term trend, or will people eventually go back to looking for stability with establishment?
It's a great question. The nature of our system and the nature of a democracy in general is that actually the politicians follow the public. Now, they may not do it immediately, and the public may be dissatisfied, but eventually politicians are not stupid, and they figure it out. So if there's a quote-unquote anti-establishment candidate that's pulling up a lot of support, the politicians are going to move towards that position. So I think what happens in the end, we're at what I consider to be phase two of the political process here in a presidential. Phase one is the silly season where people say outrageous things, the email scandal, the Donald Trump boom, and you know we don't have to filter ourselves because it's early. Now we're in phase two where people are starting to actually consider what it would be like to have a presidency from some of these folks. And they're thinking not just, boy, I'm really angry at the establishment, so I'm going to vote for the most outrageous person I can. They're also thinking is, could this person be president? What would happen if this person were in the White House? Would they think like I do? Would they be apt to act the way I would like them to in an unforeseen situation? Because the average voter is not stupid, and they know that they're too busy with their lives, and that they're hiring a president to take care of all the things that they can't take care of on the world stage. So you get this sort of, both processes that you asked about happen. One, the politicians tend towards moving towards the more anti-establishment positions that have gotten a lot of passion behind them, which is what happened when I ran. There's a whole lot of people I ran against that voted for the Iraq War that suddenly were against it. Well, that's part of the process in a democracy, and it's a good thing. And the other thing that happens is they start to picture whether this, and this is a test that I did not pass when I was a candidate, would this person be presidential? Can you imagine this person in the White House? And I think if you can't pass that test, you probably don't get elected. So both is going to happen. The regular politicians are going to become more anti-establishment, and the voters are going to start thinking more seriously about the nature of a presidency under whoever their candidate they're looking at might be.
Question from Mr. Fletcher about the issue with the possibility of the government shutting down because of the Planned Parenthood issue and whether or not President Obama will take a stake or a stance on that and compromise in some fashion.
Well, President Obama has already said that he will veto the interim budget if riders such as shutting down Planned Parenthood are in the budget. And I think that's the right thing to do. The story about Planned Parenthood is a lie. It's a lie because the films were doctored and many of the things that were supposedly said weren't said. Some of the things that Carly Fiorina said from the debate platform last week were just not true. They were plain lies. And the president is an honest person, and he's just not going to allow himself to be bulldozed by that. Secondly, just let me make a remark. I have to say that in this primary season, I think the Republicans have done everything they can to help a Democratic president get elected. If you look at the polling among Hispanics, 22% have a favorable impression of the Republican Party. Now, the minimum vote among the Hispanic population in this country that you have to get if you're a Republican is 35%. Romney got 29. Bush got almost 40. So the Republicans cannot win this general election for the presidency if they can't get to 35. This is the same. The government shutdown is the same thing. The public does not want the government to be shut down by about 2 or 3 to 1. The Republicans have by far, if you do the polling, the largest share of the blame for shutting the government down. If they do it again, they're going to get by far the largest amount of the blame. Mitch McConnell knows this. He is working really hard to make sure the government doesn't shut down. But Boehner can't control his lunatics, and they're not the majority. The majority of Republicans are not lunatics, but there's enough of them in the House so they control a lot of what happens. If the government gets shut down, that just helps the Democratic nominee being president of the United States, because people will not believe that Republicans can govern the country if they're willing to shut down the government repeatedly over non-negotiable issues. You can't run a democracy like that. The Republicans can't quite seem to get that. I think the establishment Republicans are doing everything they can to stop a shutdown. But if it does shut down, just like the entire Republican slate is getting the blame for all the anti-immigration stuff that Donald Trump has said, the entire Republican Party is going to get the blame for the 40 or 50 whack jobs in the Congress that are going to successfully shut down the government. I was talking to Congressman Clyburn this morning. He actually thinks there's a good chance that the House will, in fact, shut the government down by not passing a reasonable bill. I don't know. I'm not an insider in the Congress, but that's not going to be very good for the Republican Party, and people are not going to forget this in the next 18 months.
Governor, last quick question. If you were president now, what would be different?
That's a pretty hard question. I want to be careful about that question because, which is unlike me. anything I might say could be an interpretation as criticizing the president, and I don't really want to do that. I have my differences with the president, of course.
Stylistically, you're different guys.
Well, if I had won the election, we'd have been out of Iraq because I would have beaten Bush and he wouldn't have had a second term. And a lot of things would have been different. We would have had a different Supreme Court justices. We would have had a universal health care system that looked much different because I have done a lot of that stuff in my own state. And, you know, there's a lot. I actually believe we do have to work with Republicans to get stuff done. I'm more conservative than most Democrats about money. I'm pretty sure we could have found a budget solution if they would have been reasonable. I would have given up some stuff. I actually supported the sequester, which most liberals think is awful. The reason I did it was not because I enjoyed cutting all the things that I care about, like Head Start, is because it's the only way the Pentagon budget was ever going to get cut, because nobody will cut the Pentagon budget because everybody has a base in their hometown or something like it, or a manufacturer. And I thought that we were never going to get to a balanced budget, which I think we need to get to. So, you know, every president has a different personality. When I was governor, I worked very well with both Republicans and Democrats. Of course, our Republicans in Vermont are not exactly like the national Republicans. They're sort of like business-oriented Democrats. I do think you have to work together. But I don't want to criticize this president because I think he actually went to Washington intending to work with other people, which is why he was so incredibly attractive to the First Global generation. The MO of the First Globals, of our children, is unlike us, who are culture warriors, at least I certainly am, and proud of it. They actually would be happy to put aside the differences of opinion and work on stuff everybody can agree with and get stuff done about the 80% of stuff that isn't going to get done, like climate change. We know we did some polling on evangelical Christians when I was at the DNC. At the time, everybody over 55 was an evangelical, hated abortion and gay rights, and that was all they were about. Under 35 evangelicals, the number one issue was poverty, and the second biggest issue was climate change. And I looked at our pollster and I said, you know, why aren't we talking to these people? And in your generation, the young generation, people put aside the things they can't agree on so they can get something done about the things they can agree on. I think that's one of the great traits of this new generation. I would have liked to have thought that if I'd been put in office by all those incredible 23-year-olds who basically redesigned our political process, that some of their willingness to work together with the other side might have rubbed off on me. It's 7 years later, and it's a lot different.
Yeah. Well, with that, Governor, thank you so much for being on Chair Chat today.
Thanks very much.
And thank you, and thank all of you. You're always welcome on Chair Chats.